Hey everyone, it's the Kung Fu Genius, aka Alex Richter. And if you're listening to us on audio only, I'd appreciate you rating and reviewing the podcast wherever you listen to it. And of course, if you like what I do here, don't forget to subscribe to the Kung Fu Genius on YouTube and hit that bell for notifications. Are you a fan of Wing Chun Kung Fu? Well, if you listen to me, I assume you are. I got great news for Kung Fu Genius fans. Right now, you can get an all-access one-month free trial subscription to Wing Chun Illustrated Magazine. Yes, I said free. Go to WCINewsstand.com and register in the upper right-hand corner, fill in your email and password, and use the code KFGTRIAL to get your free trial to the issues from 2011 to the current issue. That's right, all the issues, even the one with this guy on the cover. My Kung Fu Genius column is in all the new issues, as if you need another reason to get this awesome magazine. Go get your free trial subscription today. For all that information, check out the description below. And with that, let's get started.
All right, peeps, on today's episode of the Kung Fu Genius, the genius will be answering all sorts of hot nonsense from YouTube. Lots of gems, lots of stopping punches with a snot rag, and lots of, hey, yo, you better not mention that jerk, Bill Nye the Science Guy, to the Kung Fu Genius. Let's get to it.
He is unstoppable, unbeatable, unbelievable. He's Alex Richter, the Kung Fu Genius.
And every day, I practice martial arts. What?
Word is, I'm a Kung Fu Genius. Practice all day like a genius.
Yo, Dre, how you doing, man?
I'm so good, Sifu.
I thought you were going to say you're so ready, which, judging by the last 2 minutes, is not the case. Good, man. So here we are, ready for another Ask Me Anything episode. So
let's just say Ask Me Anything.
Yep. So you got some questions for me? I think we're ready to go.
I think we can go right into it.
Let's do it.
All right. Roland Bissonette.
All right.
Off the top of the dome.
Okay. Off the top of the dome.
Yeah. He asked a freestyle question.
Freestyle.
Off the top of the dome. Oh. Hello, Sifu Alex, big fan.
Thank you.
I guess that's your name now.
Yep.
Big fan. I like that. Oh no, I didn't finish the thing. Hello, Sifu Alex, big fan of your work.
Good.
All right. Haven't missed an episode.
Awesome.
Ooh,
awesome.
Okay, I like that.
I like that because I'm sure we've probably missed a few episodes. I'm not even sure if I've seen all the episodes.
For real.
Yeah.
All right, my question. If you never would have started Wing Chun, would you have stuck with the Demiles Wing Chun Do, JKD, or would you have gone to a totally different martial art? Keep up the great work and content.
Wow, that's great. That's a great question. Yeah, it's always an interesting thought experiment. Yeah, it's an interesting thought experiment to think about what your path would have been had you not done something that kind of changed the rest of your life. Had you gone another route, what would you have done? Or is it always determined that you're always going to end up doing the same thing no matter what choices you did? Like, is there some fate behind how we do things? I don't really believe in any of that kind of stuff. So I think that, had I made a couple different choices back then, I would probably not be doing this. I might be working at a factory, super unhappy, or I don't know, working at a Dunkin'
Probably
Donuts.
Still working for BMW.
Yeah, I don't know, man, about that. I've always had a really hard time working for other people. So my last job at BMW was last century in 1999. I worked at BMW Manhattan shortly before I went to Germany, and that was kind of basically the last time I had a boss. And so, that was a... That was an interesting experience. I liked it because I earned good money, but I just hated working for someone else.
So a science guy that would come in and piss you off.
We're not going to talk about Bill Nye,
right? No.
Okay, no. I'd rather talk about Nye. I'd rather talk about Master Wong. I'd rather talk about Beardy for 3 hours. Do not ever bring up Bill Nye the Science Guy to me ever, okay?
Damn, did he make you quit?
At least not on this episode.
Huh?
At least not on this episode.
Did he make you quit BMW?
He did not, but that was during the time when I worked for BMW Motorcycles in Seattle. That wasn't my time when I worked in New York.
Okay.
Suffice it to say, Bill Nye the Science Guy is a difficult person to deal with as a customer. And that's all I'm going to say about that topic.
I wonder if he did Kung Fu.
No, because had he... Had he done kung fu, he would have chilled the F out in dealing with other people. Because he would know that maybe you shouldn't talk to people the way he talks to people, right? I'm not going to talk about Bill Nye. That is a topic for another day, all right? Anyway, don't get me started on that, right? If you ever see me acting randomly triggered in public where there's a TV, it could be because he's like currently being interviewed on CNN and I see him and I'm having like PTSD flashbacks to dealing with that guy.
Bill.
So anyway, the question was, you know, would I have continued with James DeMille's Wing Chun Do had I not found WT or the Learning System? Well, I wasn't exactly doing James DeMille's Wing Chun Do. James DeMille being one of Bruce Lee's early period students in Seattle. Later, he called his method Wing Chun Do. And it was based on what he had obviously learned from Bruce Lee during that time period in Seattle, plus with, you know, some of his own ideas and his own structure and program. Okay. He probably had the most structured program, I think, of all of the Seattle period students. And you have to realize that a lot of the Seattle era guys, they didn't really even have something proper to call what they were doing, because before Bruce Lee coined the term Jeet Kune Do, he wasn't really calling what he was teaching Wing Chun. Because already at the time when he was teaching in Seattle, he was doing things a little bit differently, or let's say in some ways a lot differently from how he learned it in Hong Kong. Mm-hmm. So obviously most of what he was doing is from Wing Chun, but he might have been changing the footwork a little bit and the stance and some of the ideas about how he trained stuff. So Bruce didn't really say he was teaching Wing Chun. And I think the other problem was is that at that time when he came in 1959, he was not considered a qualified Wing Chun instructor by Hong Kong standards. Okay. So I think he might have, just on the Chinese cultural side of things, been a little bit shy about saying, I am teaching Wing Chun, when he wasn't like necessarily a properly qualified instructor, right? Mm. So in fact, he had a number of students in Seattle, some a little bit more notable than others. Obviously, you have Jesse Glover, who was his first student. You had Ed Hart, who was a former boxer, I believe, and James DeMille, who also, I believe, was a boxer, a heavyweight boxer as well. And you had other guys, Leroy Garcia and Doug Palmer, and, you know, a bunch of guys who had, some of them had some different backgrounds in different martial arts. Obviously, you had Taki Kimura, and some of them were learning martial arts for the first time from Bruce. But Ed Hart, the late Ed Hart, said they used to just call what they were learning from Bruce the stuff. Right? Because they would just show up and he would teach him this, and they didn't, Bruce would maybe say it was kung fu, like use a generic term for martial arts, but he didn't really call it that. So until he later coined the term Jeet Kune Do, he didn't actually really have a name for what he taught. He might have, I think, by the time he was in Oakland, started calling his stuff Zhan Fan, Kung Fu Zhan Fan. Zhan Fan is his name, right? Mm-hmm. Rather than calling it Wing Chun, which I think is actually a good idea, kind of to take ownership of what you're teaching, right? So that's why all the Seattle guys, they don't really have like a set name for what they call what they do. Jesse Glover called what he did non-classical Kung Fu, because he didn't do forms and stuff like that's what he called it. Ed Hart called what he did the stuff. And James DeMille later decided to call what he did Wing Chun Do. Okay. Like Do meaning the way, you know, it's kind of a path of Wing Chun, maybe not the traditional one, but his own. Mm-hmm. So when I started learning Wing Chun, when I was about 15 years old, the teacher that was teaching me, Sifu Johan, he had learned from James DeMille, and he had learned from another Sifu named John Bial, who was James DeMille's student. John Bial eventually went on to start his own style called Qinzhou Wing Chun, which was based on the James DeMille Wing Chun Do method, but he also, I think, highly organized the teaching system and really had a very professional way of teaching it. So my Sifu came from there. So we were from the James DeMille line, but we weren't doing Wing Chun Do per se, although obviously the two arts are very, very similar, right? Oh, right. And I talked about having met James DeMille. I don't know, because for me, when I was learning that, I knew that I was learning a non-classical version of Wing Chun. And then, of course, I had a lot of interest in classical Wing Chun. So I was reading about forms like Siunam Tao Cham Kyu and Byu Ji, because we weren't learning those forms. We were just doing the the Bruce Lee stuff, which was mostly about straight punching and drop step and pak sao and very power-based chi sao and that kind of stuff. So I thought it was really great, and I loved it. Also, you know, Sifu Johan would show us boxing combinations. We would do different kicks and stuff like that. It was really great. It was not Jeet Kune Do because it was still focused mainly on personal protection. So the idea wasn't really like, okay, we're bouncing back and forth and I'm tagging you with a jab and I'm, you know, measuring distance or whatever. It's like some dude takes a swing at you and you got to go in and do something, right? Mm. It was still very much in that vein, which I appreciated. And so I, of course, had questions about classical Wing Chun. So I want to know, well, okay, if this is the kind of a modernized take on Wing Chun, well, I still wanted to know what the traditional one was, because even in my very undeveloped teenage brain, I knew that what I was learning were the edits of what Bruce Lee had learned.
Okay.
So Bruce Lee had learned a little bit of Wing Chun. He was quite good at it, quite adept at it, but obviously it wasn't the whole system. But then he also edited what he learned and taught that to the Seattle guys.
Mm.
So you're looking at a variation of Bruce Lee's edits of what he originally learned, which was not the whole system to begin with.
Gotcha. Was it one of those schools with a mystical wooden dummy back in the corner?
No. Yeah. It was very open and very modern in that way. I mean, that school was very much the antithesis of the secrets and all that kind of stuff. It was a school of hard work and kung fu for sure.
Yeah.
So, but of course, I still had interest in traditional, like, what is the classical Wing Chun? Because I wanted to see if I learned that stuff, would I have come to the same conclusion Bruce Lee did? Rather than just saying, trusting Bruce Lee's edits and saying, like, well, Bruce Lee said Wing Chun is lacking this or needs this or whatever, and I'm just going to take his word for it. What if I go and perhaps have the chance to learn Wing Chun in more depth than Bruce Lee did and see if I would have come up with the same conclusion that Bruce Lee did? Or if I would have thought, well, maybe there was stuff in traditional Wing Chun that he didn't know and didn't see, and that would make a big difference. So I would kind of check out traditional Wing Chun schools while I was training with Sifu Johan. I just wanted to see what they did. And for the most part, I was not very impressed. Most of the traditional Wing Chun schools, there weren't many in Seattle at that time. I would go and I would watch them, and they'd be doing like the Siunam Tao form, which I didn't really fully understand, but I was interested in. I wasn't like, oh, that's bullshit, a form. I was actually interested in it because I didn't know it.
Right.
But like, they would do the form for like 15, 20 minutes, and then they would start doing these drills that looked very kind of dry. And I didn't see any kind of like action, right? And then the Chi Sao looked very staged. And so I wasn't 100% sold. And I did tease out with some of those guys, and I didn't really feel that they were doing anything that was like, oh, I need to learn this, right? And it wasn't until I met a WT instructor, Sifu Ralph Hanel in Vancouver, where then I was fully convinced of WT and traditional Wing Chun and all that kind of stuff, right? So that then became my path, right? But I just need to make it clear, I wasn't really doing James the Miles Wing Chun Do. I was doing Chunzhou Wing Chun, which is essentially a variant of that, right? So had I not found WT, I still don't know if I would have stuck around with that style. Because Sifu Johan, he taught in a suburb of Seattle called Issaquah, which is where I used to live.
Yeah.
And in fact, his school is called the Kung Fu Club of Issaquah. And that's where I used to train. I love that place. It was amazing. And then,
still around?
No, he now teaches privately out of his place in Fall City, which is, like, you know, when you go out into the woods, like the movie Twin Peaks, all that stuff, like that's like where all that stuff is. He's like way out there, right? So I remember then I had to move to Seattle because I got, you know, I graduated high school. I moved into Seattle. I had a girlfriend at that time who lived in Seattle. And so I got a job at BMW.
You had a girlfriend in Seattle?
I did once. All right. At least I think so. That's, she might have been completely imaginary.
How'd you find the time?
She might have been imaginary for all I know, man. All right, I have no idea. All right,
I just caught that.
But I started working. At BMW motorcycles in Seattle, and basically my Sigong, the headquarters of Chunzhou Wing Chun, was right across the street from the motorcycle shop.
Oh.
So I was learning. You know, I learned for like 2 or 3 years with Sifu Johan, and then I moved to Seattle and started working literally across the street from my teacher's teacher, right? Yeah. And so I continued to train there, but the vibe was not the same. And as a matter of fact, I remember going there and Sifu John Bial was the instructor. He was the guy who taught Sifu Johan, and it was his school. And I remember going there and just feeling extremely unwelcomed right from the beginning. Wow. And I was already a green sash. So in that lineage, you start as a white, and then you get your blue, and then you get your green, and then brown, and then black, right? So I was like right in the middle, right? Mm-hmm. So I was already a green sash coming to him. So I wasn't like a beginner. I was like well entrenched in the program. And there was just like this vibe that like, you don't really fit in here, right? And I was like so dedicated in this style and loved it so much, only to go there. And there was also a weird thing. I don't know if you remember in a very early episode of our podcast, I talked about how I went to that sport jiu-jitsu tournament, which was at James DeMille School, yeah. Right? And I had to fight a jiu-jitsu guy, right? Yeah. And I beat the jiu-jitsu guy in front of James DeMille, Bruce Lee's student, which is like the best day of my life, right?
Yeah.
And then had the chance to talk to James DeMille, which was great. And John Bial, my teacher's teacher, was there. Mm-hmm. But none of his students competed in the sport jiu-jitsu tournament. The only ones that competed were me and my Sifu and other students from my Sifu school.
Okay.
So Sifu John Bial came to kind of support, and obviously he knew James DeMille. James DeMille was his teacher, but none of his students came. I think he was like, tournament fighting is not really the thing that we do. And I went to the tournament and literally defeated a jiu-jitsu guy essentially in front of my Si Gong at that time, right? Yeah. And then a few months later, I ended up moving to Seattle and I started training with him. And I remember the first day I came in, he goes, "Oh yeah, I remember you, the jiu-jitsu fighter," or something like that, right? Wow. The tournament competitor or something like that. And I was so naive at that time. I don't know if you have ever had this experience in your own life. Mm-hmm. Did you ever like someone or follow someone or hang out with someone that you later found out didn't like you at all?
Wow.
All right. I don't know how many experiences you have this. I don't have this experience that many times.
Okay.
But this was one of those experiences. Now when I look back at the whole thing as an adult,
yeah,
and also as someone who's taught martial arts now for 20 years, he hated me. He absolutely hated me. And no. I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
He didn't like the
fact
that
you were cocky because you won. No,
it wasn't that at all. First of all, I won the fight against a jiu-jitsu guy and I lost my second fight against one of James DeMille's students because I was just so tired. But again, I didn't care that I lost to the Wing Chun Do guy because at least I beat the jiu-jitsu guy. I was like, okay, fine. Right. So I didn't even care that I lost to the Wing Chun Do guy. Right. But yeah, there was like this weird vibe, and I don't know what it was. Mm. But I was not the guy to walk in and go like, "Yeah, I competed in a jiu-jitsu tournament and beat like that." At age 19, 20, I was not that way at all. I was cocky when I was dealing with people outside of the school who did other martial arts, for sure.
Okay.
But never in the school. I was not like always bowing, always very respectful. Humble. "Thank you, sir. Yes, sir." All that kind of stuff, right? And he just hated my guts. I didn't realize it then. But at some point, after training there for about 6 months, I was like, I'm not enjoying myself anymore. So had I not found WT, which I found shortly after that, I don't think I would have stuck around because I just had such a bad experience. And the problem was, even if I had moved back to, let's say, Issaquah and continued training with Sifu Johan, I don't think I would have wanted to continue in that system because eventually when I would go for my black sash, I would still have to deal with John Bial at some point.
Okay.
And he left such a sour taste in my mouth. And one thing that I can say was really great about him is he's a highly organized way of teaching.
Oh, right.
The fact that we have those student handbooks,
yeah,
that I got from him. Oh, that was his idea. So cool. He created that. Like, he had a very professional way of teaching, step by step. And I really admire Sifu John Bial for how he organized his system. And even to this day, a lot of what I saw him do with what he learned from James DeMille's Wing Chun Do, organizing it and making it really professional, I tried to do the same thing with WT.
Got it.
All right?
So you did learn from him.
I am 100% like in his debt for that inspiration. And also, and for Sifu Johan, for everything that those guys taught me. But like Sifu Langting would say, you know, sometimes a negative education is still an education. Sometimes you got to learn what you don't want and what you don't like. And in the way he dealt with his students in general and in the way he dealt with me, I was like, no,
that's
no.
not what I want.
No, I don't want to be that kind of Sifu at all. So all in all, it was a huge teachable moment. But I think that had I not found WT, I don't think I would have stuck around with that just because Sifu John Beall left a very sour taste in my mouth, despite the fact that he's an amazing martial artist and a very serious guy, very practical. He understands the difference between fighting and hokey kung fu, and like he understands it, he gets it, and he probably is not that famous. He's not as famous as he should be because he does have a really good system, and he's integrated grappling and all sorts of stuff. But I just, it's not just about the style, and it's not just about how good your martial arts are. It's also about how you treat people and how you are, right?
Okay.
And so I don't think I would have stuck around. And the other thing was, because I get the question a lot. It wasn't exactly the question posed here, but I get this a lot in the comments. People go, how come if I'm such a Bruce Lee fan, how come I don't do Jeet Kune Do?
Ooh.
Right? And so people ask me that, right? And which I always go, well, I'm a Bruce Lee fan and I do Wing Chun. I mean, it's not, I don't see where that's like that far off. And the I can be very direct about why I don't practice Jeet Kune Do. I can tell you exactly why I don't do it.
okay, why?
There are I would say that there are essentially two main reasons why I don't do it. All right. The first reason is because I did try Jeet Kune Do when I was a teenager, and it was kind of a bad experience. And so I'll explain it to you. So obviously as a Bruce Lee nerd and someone who was doing Wing Chun and all this stuff, I wanted to see if there was any Jeet Kune Do in the Seattle area. And there really wasn't any Jeet Kune Do in the Seattle area because the Seattle area was pretty much the guys who learned from Bruce Lee before Jeet Kune Do. It was all the early stuff, right? The JKD stuff was really, I mean, you have JKD all over the world, but like that's really a California thing when he was there, right? So I was looking, and there was a community college in my area, Bellevue Community College. And I got like a catalog from them every semester. And they had like ongoing education classes. Like, you know, you could sign up for like a 6-week course on learning computers, like adult education type courses, right? Okay. And they had some physical education ones, and they had a Jeet Kune Do one in there. And I was like, Jeet Kune Do? And it was like, yeah, it was like 6 weeks or 8 weeks or something. You pay this flat fee and the class meets once a week and you learn Jeet Kune Do from this Jeet Kune Do certified instructor. And I was like, well, that's cool. I was doing Wing Chun 3-4 times a week. I didn't have much time to do extra stuff, but the Jeet Kune Do thing was one time a week. So I'm like, all right, I can go one time a week and try out Jeet Kune Do and see how I like it, right? And when I went there, I went there with one of my friends who was also doing Wing Chun with me, a guy named Chris Sinkar. He was kind of my training partner at that time. And we would always like, we would go into other Wing Chun schools and other martial arts schools and act like ringers, like we didn't really know anything. And then we would train. Like,
you were one of those.
Chris and I used to do that shit all the time. We'd walk into other Wing Chun schools. Or we'd walk into Taekwondo schools. And, you know, we were troublemakers
looking
at the
like
time.
A boba.
Right? So we went to do this Jeet Kune Do thing together. And the first class was like interesting. The first class, even though it was a Jeet Kune Do class, the first class he showed like Filipino martial arts, right? So we go there and he's showing us like some stuff with sticks, right? So we're doing double, like my first Jeet Kune Do class, he puts two sticks in my hands and I'm doing a bunch of like crazy stuff with sticks. And then he takes the sticks out and then you do stuff without the sticks, right? And this is the empty hand version of it. Okay, cool. That was the first class. Second class, a week later, he's like, all right, this week we're going to do Salat, all right?
Yeah.
And then I'm like, okay.
I remember this stuff.
And then he gave us a handkerchief, like a bandana.
Yeah.
Like a bandana you wear. And he was showing us punch defense with a handkerchief, all right? I remember. Now, I'm not saying that that's not realistic or it doesn't work or whatever, but for me, having come from like a place where, okay, if you're going to learn something, you got to learn in an organized way. Mm-hmm. Like if I go to, like when I learned boxing, I went to a boxing coach, and the boxing coach just starts you with like the basics,
the fundamentals,
right. Keep your hands up, keep your hand up, jab, cross, hook, uppercut. Okay. Footwork. Now put mm-hmm. this together step by step, because that's how you learn it. You can't just go, all right, here, let's hit mitts and then just throw a hook any way, which way you want. You start with fundamentals. Doesn't matter what you do. And like, so week one was like some crazy Kali stuff. Week two is like learning how to use a snot rag to defend a stray punch. All right. And then week three was like, okay, now we're doing kicks from Savat. Right. And as a martial arts geek, I found all of this stuff interesting. Mm-hmm. Because for me, it was like, I'm learning Wing Chun. Wing Chun is my style. Once a week, I'm going and I'm doing other stuff, right? So because that wasn't my martial arts school of choice, like for a couple of weeks, I could look at it and go like, oh, cool, we did some interesting thing. That was interesting or whatever. But week to week, I was going like, but I don't know what any of this stuff has to do with Bruce Lee or what Bruce Lee did. Oh, right. I never saw Bruce Lee defend a punch with a bandana.
Okay.
I never saw Bruce Lee excessively train with two Kali sticks. Yeah, I know he used it in Enter the Dragon, but come on. You know right. what I'm talking about, all right?
I've never even seen Bruce Lee with a bandana.
Yeah, and although Bruce took notes on Savat, didn't really see him doing like a lot of Savat stuff. And so everything we were doing, I felt was disconnected to Bruce Lee. Now, that doesn't mean it's not good. Mm-hmm. But when I want to do Bruce Lee's Jeet Kune Do, and lesson one is Filipino martial arts, two is Indonesian martial arts with a bandana, three is French martial arts, I start to go, where's the Bruce Lee stuff? Yeah. All right? And then by the fourth or fifth class, we were starting to do some of the so-called trapping. And that stuff was kind of right. that stuff was kind of easy for me because obviously I've been doing Wing Chun. And then he would have a spar at the end without any equipment. I remember that. He's like, all right, grab a partner and just go back and forth and use some control. We had no equipment on, no gloves, mm-hmm. no mouthpiece, no nothing.
Yeah.
And he had some guys there who had been training with him for a while. So I'm like, I'm going to train with his assistant instructors because they're better than these other guys who don't know what they're doing, right? And I would train with those guys. And, you know, because I had a black belt in Taekwondo, I knew how to move around at distance a little bit. I knew how to keep my hands up from some basic boxing training, but I didn't learn any of that stuff in the Jeet Kune Do class.
All right.
All right. Because in the Wing Chun stuff, okay, you come at me, I'm going to do my Wing Chun. But now we're going back and forth and we're doing kind of like kickboxing style sparring. And because of my Taekwondo background and having learned a little bit of boxing as a teenager, I could actually, you know, I could move around. But none of that stuff was stuff that I had learned in Jeet Kune Do class. In fact, I remember just doing the lead leg side kick and doing the of course, with the right lead because it's Bruce Lee style, yeah. doing the right straight lead. And I remember I'm doing this stuff because I saw it in Bruce Lee's book, but I had not seen it in the actual Jeet Kune Do class that I went to, right? So I was going back and forth and we would get in close and we would like grapple a little bit, stand up grappling. And then I was able to use some of my Chi Sao and some of this stuff. And I remember the instructor was like, hey, what have you trained before? And I said, oh, I did Wing Chun. He goes, oh, yeah, very good infighting, sticking and grappling, like stand up grappling stuff. I was like, oh, thank you. I thought that was cool that he noticed that.
Yeah.
And then it was also a good feeling for me, like, oh, some of these skills that I'm learning are transferable, right? But I think even though it was like a 6-class course, I think by the 5th or 6th class, I think I stopped coming because although the sparring bit was cool, but I was like, but what am I mean, I could spar with my buddy Chris. We would beat the crap out of each other all the time. Like I don't need to drive all the way to Bellevue Community College to spend an hour, you know, learning to fight with a dish towel just to spend 15 minutes sparring with some guys and, you know, getting a fat lip and not learning anything new, you know. So I was like, all right. And I remember after that going like, so that's what Jeet Kune Do is now? It's like this amalgamation of all these things that have no thread. See, it would be one thing if like he showed the Kali stuff and then he showed how that worked into a Jeet Kune Do concept. Mm-hmm. And then later showed the rag and then how that works in. And like it was like if he showed like 5 separate things and then on the 6th or 5th or 6th lesson put it together and showed you how all this stuff came together, like it was a grand plan all along, I'd be like, wow, that's impressive. But it was just like a quilt made out of like patches that don't even match.
God.
Right? And it's not even one.
I have one
right?
of those.
Yeah, exactly, yeah, yeah. right? And so that left a really kind of bad taste in my mouth for what I thought Jeet Kune Do was. I'm like, oh, so I guess it is just kind of a hodgepodge of stuff, right? And I remember I felt a little bit like, I think that instructor might be kind of a hack. Now, that instructor claimed that he was a certified instructor under the late Sifu Larry Hartzell. Sifu Larry Hartzell had been learning Jeet Kune Do since the time that Bruce Lee was still alive. But he was, I think, primarily learning from Dan Inosanto in the early 70s. But when he started learning Jeet Kune Do, Bruce was still alive. So that's how old school Larry Hartzell is, right? And he later, he had an affinity for grappling and he liked grappling. So he was essentially credited for adding some grappling elements into Jeet Kune Do. But Larry Hartzell is unfortunately he passed away, was one of the most well-respected of all of the students of Dan Inosanto. Mm-hmm. But this guy that I took this course from claimed that he was certified under Larry Hartzell. And I had a couple of Larry Hartzell's books, his like Entering into Trapping and Grappling, Jeet Kune Do books. And so I decided to contact Larry Hartzell and ask him, like, what's the deal with this guy?
Oh, wow.
And I don't know how I got it because we're talking, this is late 90s. So the internet is around, but it's not the internet as you know it. But somehow I managed to find his email address. Okay. I don't know how. Maybe it was in Black Belt Magazine or something. Maybe it was in one of the books. I don't know. But I managed to find Larry Hartzell's email address and I emailed him. And I was like, Sifu Hartzell, like, I'm a big fan of your books. Uh-huh. And, I just want you to know that I did this course with this guy. I forget his name. And he claims to be an instructor under you. But I found that the class was very disorganized. And I also found that, there was no thread in terms of what we were doing. And I wasn't sure about his qualifications. And I just wanted to let you know that, right? And Sifu Larry Hartzell wrote me back. Wow. And his response couldn't have been more polite, more kind, more gracious. All right. Now imagine, okay, I'm like some teenager and I'm telling this, very established Jeet Kune Do instructor who's been doing Jeet Kune Do since Bruce Lee was alive. Like this guy who teaches under you is kind of crap. Most instructors would not react very graciously to some snot-nosed teenager saying something like that, right? So Sifu Larry Hartzell wrote such a gracious email, and he was like, I'm very happy you like my books, and I hope you find them helpful. I'm very sorry that you had that experience. Yes, this instructor is certified under me, but I don't know why he would be teaching in kind of that random kind of way that I had described. He goes, thank you for bringing it to my attention. I'm going to look into it, respectfully, Sifu Larry Hartzell or Larry Hartzell, right? Mm-hmm. And I thought it was amazing. And I was just like, wow, thank you so much for writing. I really appreciate it.
I thought he was going to say, I don't know this dude.
No. He did. So he did. But the thing is that he was very gracious and even said that he would look into it. Now, that email address I had back then, I don't even know what email account that was. Mm-hmm. Once I got Gmail in the 2000s, on my other 8 email addresses I had before, I don't know. So unfortunately, I also had emails from like Jesse Glover and stuff, but they're on email accounts that are no longer, unfortunately. Mm. So I wish I still had it because it was a beautiful email and it was very gracious and it showed me a lot about, what a good Sifu, what a good instructor, how they should react to these kind of things. I was always taken aback. Mm. So to kind of circle back, why did I not do Jeet Kune Do? Well, that was my first Jeet Kune Do experience. And I was kind of like, The second reason why I didn't do it is after that, I started to read up a lot on Jeet Kune Do. And I saw that there was this conflict between the original Jeet Kune Do guys, the guys who want to practice Jeet Kune Do, basically the way Bruce Lee did it, a la Chan Fan Kung Fu, mm-hmm. versus people who are doing the concepts Jeet Kune Do, which is what I learned from that guy, right? Which is, a more eclectic way of looking at Wing Chun, a more eclectic way of looking at martial arts training, although most Jeet Kune Do people don't like to say that they do an eclectic martial art because it's not just about mixing random things. It's about a concept, so on and so forth. I mean, it's very difficult to define original JKD and JKD concepts without someone getting pissed off.
Okay.
And that is the second reason why I didn't do Jeet Kune Do, because the definition of Jeet Kune Do is nebulous. All right. With Wing Chun, Wing Chun people, they don't agree at all. Which you could say is similar to Jeet Kune Do, but at least most Wing Chun people say, okay, you do Wong Sun Leung Wing Chun, you do Choi Sung Tin Wing Chun, you do Leung Teng Wing Chun, you do William Cheung Wing Chun. So even though those different streams of Wing Chun may not totally agree on how they do it, but they go, yeah, the Wing Chun you do is like that because you're learning in that line. Mm. Mm-hmm. And that comes from Yip Man or that comes from whoever, right? But there's no existential questions about Wing Chun. It's about what kind of Wing Chun do you like, what flavor do you like, and how good are you at it?
There's no Wing Chun concepts.
Yet with JKD, Bruce Lee said if people were to make a big deal about the name Jeet Kune Do after his death, that the name should be wiped out altogether because he did not want to establish a martial art. Jeet Kune Do, as he said, is just the name of his own ignorance, you know, that he's trying to find the cause of his own ignorance and become a more enlightened martial artist and not be bound by dogma and styles. So to a certain degree, calling something Jeet Kune Do now is a crystallization of his style, which is not at all what he wanted. So the problem is, Jeet Kune Do people are in a pickle.
Mm.
Because by using that name, you are copying Bruce, which is in direct contradiction to what the founder wanted. So Jeet Kune Do is not really definable. You could say it's the way of the intercepting fist. But beyond that, is it a set of techniques that Bruce Lee practiced while he was alive? Is it a concept? Can it grow out of that? And if what you do in your own personal Jeet Kune Do is totally different, do you need to call it Jeet Kune Do at all? Can you just call it martial arts? So the problem is they have an identity crisis. And it's very difficult to want to do a martial art that has an identity crisis. All right? Because at least in Wing Chun, we say, oh, I don't like the way that person does Wing Chun. But you're still acknowledging that person does Wing Chun.
Okay.
All right? The Jeet Kune Do people are like, no, it's either this way or that way. And so that kind of turned me off a lot. It wasn't until I started to talk to Big Sean when we had the Dudes of Kung Fu podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And then I met Steve Golden that I started to look into Jeet Kune Do as an art by people who had actually learned it from Bruce Lee. So, well, there's a lot of really good stuff there in terms of distance and timing and rhythm and learning how to use that. And I learned a lot from my 5 years of the podcast with Sean about Jeet Kune Do. So I kind of softened my stance on JKD again.
Mm-hmm.
But my stance softening is looking at what Bruce Lee's ideas were and seeing how that those ideas can maybe improve not just my Wing Chun, but me as a martial artist without having to identify that as Jeet Kune Do. So that's why I think you can get the best of Jeet Kune Do in your personal life, in your philosophy, in your martial art, without having to adhere to the name. But to do Jeet Kune Do as a formal martial art, you're going to have an identity issue because essentially Jeet Kune Do is a nebulous term.
Okay.
All right. So what's the next question?
Wow.
Hey, Kung Fu Genius listeners. If you're looking for an easy way to support this podcast, please consider joining the Kung Fu Genius Patreon. You can support for as little as $5 a month and get access to episodes a few days early. Higher levels of support get additional goodies, exclusive content, and even your name in the description. The baller level of support will give you the opportunity to be a Dre for a day and give me a rest from this guy over here. A link for the Kung Fu Genius Patreon page is in the description below. You can also support us by subscribing to the Kung Fu Genius on YouTube, liking this video, and sharing it on your social media platforms. When you subscribe on YouTube, don't forget to hit that bell for notifications so you will know as soon as a new episode or a premiere is available for you to watch. For those of us who listen to us on audio, it's a huge help if you don't just rate the podcast, but also write a review wherever you listen to the Kung Fu Genius, such as Apple or Google Podcasts. I really appreciate it. And now back to me.
We got Joe Smith.
Joe Smith.
Yes,
all right.
We do.
It's like a name you give a security guard when he kicks you out for skateboarding. What's your name? I don't want everyone to see you again. Joe Smith. All right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of the recent renovations to the Bruce and Brandon gravesite at Lakeview Cemetery? They've built a walkway platform, and it is now surrounded by railings.
Yes, that's true. So I have not been to the grave of Bruce Lee since probably 2011,
mm-hmm.
something like that, maybe 2010.
Mm.
So when I first moved...
I haven't been there yet.
Yeah, when
I should do a live episode at...
Nah, it's kind of weird. It's kind of disrespectful. All right?
Okay.
I'm not superstitious,
uh-huh.
and I'm not like... I don't believe in any kind of religion or any of that kind of stuff.
Uh-huh.
But I still think, no, you don't...
You don't mess with the dead.
No. It's just not respectful. Also because other people have feelings and wishes about that. And even if you don't believe in it, you should respect other people's
feelings about that stuff, right? You don't go and do like a live stream on IG from Bruce Lee's grave. I think that's kind of weird, right?
Put your Ouija board away.
Yeah, exactly, right? Oh, a Ouija board, as he said, right?
It's right here.
Yeah.
Right. It's literally right here waiting.
Yeah. So when I first went to Bruce Lee's grave, so obviously I talked about how my family, I grew up here on the East Coast, but when I started high school, my dad, we moved to Washington State because my dad got transferred for work. So suddenly I started high school. I'm like the East Coast kid from Jersey in like a school full of people who talk like this, dude. Yeah,
were they,
dude.
Were they saying dang down there?
No. They said like... this slang at that time, this is the early 90s. Mm-hmm. Like if something was, instead of saying very, they would say mass. It's like mass big, bro. And I remember going, then everyone sounded like a California stoner. And I thought they were all making fun of me. Didn't realize that half the people who live in Washington State are from California. So like, but it was a lot like the Karate Kid movie. Like I was Ralph Macchio, except I could actually do martial arts. I didn't suck. And everyone there is like so California. Mm-hmm. And it was just so weird. I was such a fish out of water there.
Okay.
But obviously, because I was a Bruce Lee fan, I was like, wow, I want to go to Bruce Lee's grave at some point. I didn't have a chance to go to Bruce Lee's grave until I finally got my license at 16.
Mm.
Because then I could drive there myself because no one was going to take me there. So I drove to Lakeview Cemetery. And it's kind of weird. I might have mentioned this on the dudes. I apologize for anyone who heard this story before. Again, I'm not a... I not sound like Forrest Gump. I'm not a spiritual man.
Yeah, right.
I don't believe in any kind of fate or anything like that, right? But I parked my car and I walked into the cemetery through the main entrance, and I had no idea where Bruce Lee's grave was because this was not the time of Google. Like you just type it, where is Bruce Lee's grave at Lakeview Cemetery? And there's a map there that'll show you how to get there. I just showed up and I just knew that he was buried there.
Okay.
And I looked around to the left. There's an entire Chinese section where there's like only Chinese graves.
Hmm.
And I looked at it. Of course, I had seen Bruce Lee's grave in photos and I'd seen it in the movie No Retreat, No Surrender. So I had kind of an idea that it was up on some kind of hill or crest or something like that. But I remember I looked at all the Chinese graves and I'm like, he's not with them. I don't know what it was. It was called an intuition. I'm like, he's not with the other Chinese guys. And I look to the other side and I go, nah, he's not going to be near the entrance. It's not grand enough.
Mm.
And I looked ahead and like the cemetery goes up a slight hill. And I'm like, I think he's at the top of the hill.
Okay.
Because he would have the best view of the lake from there. Not in the front where the wall is going to hide it. So I just made a beeline to the crest of the hill. And I literally walked in a straight line to Bruce Lee's grave. The first time ever there. And I had no idea where it was. And it's not a small cemetery.
Right.
And I walked in a straight line to his grave, having never been there. I had only seen it in No Retreat, No Surrender.
So he was just like walking.
And so I just walked straight there.
Oh, yeah. Here it is right here.
It was right there. And at that time, Brandon had passed away. He had recently passed away.
Okay.
And he didn't have that nice gravestone yet. He had a flat plot in the ground. It just had Brandon Lee and the date next to Bruce Lee. And Bruce Lee's grave had been vandalized. Because the marble, it was a marble etching and his face had been vandalized. Someone
put mustache or something?
No, they just scratched it and stuff like that. Yeah, dickhead kids, you know what it is. And I remember went there and it was weird because when I went there, I got super emotional.
Yeah.
Because since I was 8 years old, like I had, you know, read about this guy. He's the guy who got me into martial arts. And like there I am basically standing 6 feet above him. It's like the closest you'll ever be to him. And I just had this like overwhelming feeling of just like, just awe, like this, like everything he's done. And now I'm just like, and the crazy thing was there was no one else in the cemetery, super quiet. And this is Bruce Lee, the biggest martial arts film star ever, who did all these movies with Chuck Norris and all this stuff, Green Hornet and everything.
Wow.
And here I am, like I'm with him. And it's basically, I'm alone. And there's no one there. And it's quiet. And it was just like this weird, overwhelming moment for me, right? And then I used to go there pretty regularly because there's a set of stairs that goes up Capitol Hill where if you run them, it's like the most hardcore workout. And I used to park my car at the bottom of the hill and I used to run up
top
the stairs.
Speed.
Yeah. And then I used to then run across, go into the cemetery. I would see Bruce and then I would go run back down and go in my car. And I would do that like once a week. So I was a little fanatical. I would literally, I'd see Bruce once a week. There was like a time period where I saw Bruce Lee once a week, like a nerd, right? And yeah, people wonder, geez, any wonder why I'm doing a podcast that's 80% Bruce Lee related, right? It literally used to go see him every week. And then they eventually gave Brandon a much nicer headstone. And then when I left Seattle in the late 90s, that was it. In the couple times I had gone, they added like a bench that was across from it so you can kind of sit at the bench and look at it. And then recently they put some railings there because I think a lot of people were trampling over the graves that were kind of around it to get to Bruce Lee's grave, right? Okay. So they've kind of and a lot of people go there. And I think now if you walk in, it's even easier to see because it's a lot more grand than it used to be. So it's nice. I mean, I haven't been there since they did those renovations, so I can't say whether I think it's better than it was before. But like I remember, I mean, the first time I went there was still the original gravestone from 73. And now it's updated and it's been changed and renovated, so that's a new one. But I saw the original one that he was buried with.
Man, I definitely want to make my way over there.
Well, anytime.
I don't know how we should react to it.
Look, I have some friends in Seattle.
Yeah.
You could very easily twist my arm and convince me to go to Seattle for a weekend. I can't stay in Seattle for more than 3 days because it's a beautiful city.
Yeah.
But the people there are kind of weird. After 3 days, when you've been in Seattle for 3 days, you're like, okay, I've seen everything. I can go now. You don't need more than 3 days
in
Seattle.
That's how I feel about Vegas.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those things, right? Yeah. Seattle is a town that's pretending to be a city. Mm-hmm. And the people, a lot of the people who are there kind of, they give that vibe.
Yeah.
They're trying hard to show you how awesome they are. Oh. But the cool thing about Seattle is it's close to Vancouver, Canada. So if we go to Seattle, we can take a drive to Vancouver, Canada. Ooh. Go check that out. Go to Bruce Lee's grave. There's great food in Seattle. Okay. Great Vietnamese food. Great Mexican food. Yeah. And then 3 days and we're done. You don't need to be there longer than that. All right, and I'll show you all the spots. We should go. Let's do it.
We should do a run. There's a personal reason why I got to go to Washington.
That's right. I think you got to go to you got to go to Spokane or Yakima or something like that, right?
You got to go to Spokane, make a visit.
Yeah.
So
that's a little bit out there, though. That's all the way east. Yeah. That's a bit of a drive. Yeah. Washington's a big state.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Cool. All right. What do we got next?
Next up, we got Teddy Jr.
Mm-hmm.
And Teddy Jr. says, "Really glad I found your channel.
I'm glad you found our channel too.
Okay." You're very knowledgeable,
so.
And you're objective. I love that.
People who know me personally know that's bullshit.
All right.
I might try to be more objective on the podcast than I actually am.
All right. I also love it whenever you have John Little on the show.
I love it, too. I would have John Little every other week if I could.
What about Little John?
Little John? Is that a rapper?
Little John, if you ain't taking shots, get the F out of the club.
Got it.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
You guys keep me young with all this pop culture
shots
reference.
Like, Jello shots! That's the one, yes.
Yes. Should have Little John on the show, too. Okay. Little John and John Little together.
Got it. Wow.
That would be so lit.
Yeah.
I think Little John did.
It's like the Keymaster and the Gatekeeper together. Yeah. Zool will come.
Okay. I'm really going to try to avoid my question being long-winded, but it's somewhat complicated. Okay. However, I'm going to give it a shot.
All right.
My question is, I read that during the last year of his life, Bruce Lee was using some sort of device that would help him to achieve a state of relaxation. Okay? Almost to the point where he was just on the verge of sleep, like right there on the cusp.
Mm-hmm.
The reason he sought to achieve this extreme state of relaxation was because of his belief that the more relaxed we are, the faster our bodies are able to react. Like when at times, as we're falling asleep, our bodies snap or jolt to a more awakened state.
Yeah, you ever have that where you jolt? Every time I have that, I think I'm dying of something. Like when you have a sleep, you're like, oh my God, am I dying of something?
Yeah, you know what that's supposed to be?
What?
It's supposed to be your body trying to astrally project.
Oh, right, of course.
If you let it happen, you can like float above you and just go, oh, look, that's how I look sleeping. How creepy.
Got it.
That's deep.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hey, I'm here for you.
Yo, you ever have a temporary sleep paralysis?
Oh, my God.
I've never had it.
The most terrifying thing in the world.
It was crazy.
You wake up and your body is still asleep, but you're conscious, mm-hmm. and you can't physically move your limbs, and you have this like weird feeling like someone is coming and trying to get you and you can't move.
Yeah,
it's terrifying. Anyway, Okay. Back to the question.
Okay. Snap or jolt to a more awakened state due to the sensation of falling. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes. That was the full question.
Okay.
I believe.
All right.
Oh, no. Okay. There's more.
Okay.
Bruce Lee was striving to achieve that state of semi-consciousness in an attempt to utilize this sudden, speedy, jolting reaction when in a combative situation. Mm-hmm. By any chance, had you heard anything about this? If so, do you know what exactly this device was? If not, perhaps you could ask John Little or Little John to see if he's privy to Bruce utilizing a device of this nature, if such a device exists at all.
Got it.
Thanks, Alex, and keep up the great work you do.
Thank you. So that was a very long and well-constructed question to which I have no answer for. So I know that Bolo once went over Bruce Lee's place and said that Bruce Lee, I think, again, I'm paraphrasing, I'm sure. You know, when what people don't realize is when we answer these questions, I'm just going off the top of my head. I don't have my phone in front of me where I can quickly Google something and go like, And then
that'll be weird because you'll be in the camera.
Yeah. And then and then you get like a little fact wrong. And then someone in the comments like, well, actually, this was in 1970. Well, actually, you Googled it when you heard it on the podcast and then put it in the comments. All right.
True.
Shut up with your knowledge. All right. I believe that Bolo Yeung told the story that he went over to Bruce Lee's place, is the Kowloon Tong mansion, and Bruce had like a headset and he was listening to something. And it was like different types of sounds. I think it was like city sounds or cars honking. But there would be some sound in the background, like some sound of nature. Mm-hmm. And then he would have to like filter through those sounds to hear that like sound of water dropping or something like this or whatever. And so, but that's all I know. I don't, that is a very good question for John Little. I don't really know. There's a lot of questions about what Bruce Lee did in that time period, like using the electro stimulation for his muscles, you know, drinking the blood or whatever. Like there's a lot of rumors about like, you know, what Bruce Lee was doing at that time for his training or his nutrition or his mental state or whatever. And I generally tend to believe that most of that is kind of hearsay and made up stories or half truths or something he tried once that people said he did all the time, or other things might just be completely fabricated. I don't know, but that's a really good question for John Little. I basically have absolutely no idea how to answer that question. So anyway, that was weird. There's an earthquake in here or something like that? And table shaking?
I have no idea what it's all about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dre, you're getting more gray in your beard.
Well, thank you.
Yes.
I like to think that that's making me more refined.
More refined? Yeah. And the accent, too.
Yeah, you know, you could just feel in.
Yeah, there's something more professional about you right now.
Is that correct?
Yes.
Absolutely.
You know, I think people get freaked out because sometimes when I tend to be long-winded and you're off camera for a little bit, you'll sometimes part your hair to the other side or you'll maybe pull your beard down. And when the camera comes back on you, sometimes you look visibly different than you normally do. And this throws some people off in the comments.
It's true, but I don't feel any different.
Got it. You don't really sound any different either.
No. I mean, in general, I'm just me.
Right. Okay.
Okay.
So what's the next question?
All right. Well, that was a great question, by the way. I'd love to hear another one from that guy at some point.
Sure.
But so the next one is coming from Abel. Hi. Great podcast.
Thank you.
One question I always wondered about was when Lee was fighting O'Hara in Enter the Dragon, what was in Bruce's foot? Looked like something in his sock.
Ah, yes. The infamous swollen ankle scene in Enter the Dragon.
Ah, yeah.
So during it's a bit of a continuity error during his fight scene with the late Bob Wall. Bruce has to kick Bob Wall on the neck.
Yeah.
And I think what they did is they put a pad in Bruce Lee's sock around the ankle. And they did it so that when he kicked Bob Wall right on the neck, because they wanted to actually show contact, he didn't want to necessarily like fully kick Bob Wall on the neck. So they put a pad in his sock. So his ankle looks super swollen because there's basically a pad in his sock.
Yeah.
And he kicks He kicks Bob Wall in the neck, and then I think they do one or two other quick exchanges without taking that pad out of his sock. So if like your eagle-eyed viewers of Enter the Dragon will notice that, you know, there's like one or two flashes where Bruce's ankle looks like tremendously swollen, and it's swollen because they forgot to take the padding out that was in there for when he kicked Bob Wall's neck. And that's it. It's just a
straight neck kicking.
Neck kicking, right? So it's just a pad thing or whatever, right?
Damn.
Man, you are like the Flash. Your ability to change shirts is crazy.
I didn't change my shirt.
Oh, really? I thought you were wearing a
shirt changed itself.
Oh, yeah. Got it. That's very Jeet Kune Do. I do not hit. It hit all by itself. I do not change my shirt. It changes all by itself.
Right, right, right.
All right, what's the next question?
Next up, we got... Oh, thank you for answering the question.
Oh, sure. Anytime.
Yeah. Next up, we got Abel.
Abel?
Abel.
That's the question that you just asked me.
My bad.
Yeah.
My bad. I'm just
you got to pay a bit more attention.
Brain fart.
Yeah.
This is brain fart.
Right, right. It's that shirt changing, also doing some brainwashing.
Yeah.
Next up, we got Roland Bissonette.
Is that the first question we started with?
Just messing with you, yeah.
Yo, what happened? There was a bit of an earthquake, and it's like your brain just...
It's the shirt.
There was an event in here. I think we are now in an alternate universe. I think we've actually ended up in one of Dryson's hypotheticals.
Oh, no.
You're having a podcast. There's an earthquake in the middle of it.
Oh.
Dre's face keeps changing, and his shirt keeps changing.
What's happening?
What's happening?
What is happening? Shout out to alternate universes.
That's right.
All of them. All right, next up we got Fernando Nunez.
All right.
All right. What is your opinion on the spring arm dummy? Do you think it is a good training tool if you do not have access to a partner? Thanks.
Yes, so there is a spring arm dummy. Which is basically a wooden dummy. Well, I think they have some wooden dummies that have multiple arms, like all three of the arms have springs on them. And then they have some that's basically one arm with a spring, and then there's a pad on the wall. So basically you have one arm sticking out that you can do paxao or lapsao or something like that while hitting. I don't think those things are bad at all, especially if it's spring-loaded, because obviously when we practice Wing Chun, we want to make sure that we maintain pressure and stick. So, for example, if you did a paxao on a spring arm and you're pressing that spring arm down, the arm is loaded. If you let off, that thing is going to kind of spring back and hit you.
Okay.
Very much the way someone's arm would. So the spring arm will kind of force you to, when you slap it down, then you have to transfer that control to the other arm to keep that thing from springing back at you. Mm-hmm. So I think it definitely has some benefit.
Should we praise that spring arm?
Praise that spring arm. Yes. Wow. That was a Wing Chun pun right there. Praise the spring. Hallelujah. It is Wing Chun. I want to praise that spring. It is not eternal spring. It is praise that spring.
That
I want to praise that spring. Look at that spring. That's a great spring right there. Praise that spring. All right. Okay. It actually means springtime, not spring.
My bad.
It's okay. It's okay. We can make jokes in English that make no sense in Chinese. So yeah, I mean, look, there's all sorts of great and innovative equipment out there. You know, the question is this a good thing if you don't have a training partner? I said, yeah, it's great. But if you could only have one piece of equipment, I'd still rather have a heavy bag.
True, true.
Hit something, man. Mm. Hit something.
Yeah, I wear a wall bag. I like wall bags.
Wall bags, heavy bags, something you can hit.
Old bags.
Wow, what? Really?
That's not very nice.
That's not very nice.
What do you mean? Oh, old wall bag is dope with the leather worn and you just like...
Yeah, that's what he meant.
Yeah.
Whatever, Trey.
All right.
You're terrible.
Next up, we got Mark Pinder.
That's what's up. Okay. Patreon supporter.
Yes, 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 yes. Like Dryson. Hello, Mr. Genius. Are your shorts still tight? Only kidding. In one of your podcasts, you said that you have a copy of Bruce Lee's autopsy report.
Mm-hmm.
Could you please tell me? Dre. No, him. Mark. Could you please tell me how you got it?
No.
Hold on. He's not done.
Yeah, but I'm answering that question right now
or
with a no.
Or where could I download it from? Keep up the fantastic work. Hand clap, Mark.
No, I cannot tell you where I got it. I cannot tell you where to download it. Do you know why he asked if my shorts were still tight?
I don't know.
Do you remember that?
I kinda not.
There's a famous photo of you and I working out after our workout, our post-workout photo.
Right.
I'm on one side, you're on the other side.
I could have sworn you had the superheroes on, the blues.
Yeah, I had the blue superheroes on, right? And someone in the comments, some random chucklehead in the comments,
right,
asked me, or wrote, "Are you Jewish?" to me, all right? Which is not an offensive question in and of itself, but it's a bizarre question to put, it's a bizarre comment to put on just like some kind of beefcake photo or whatever, right? And then someone else commented, "Are his pants really that tight?"
Yeah.
So Mark Pinder there, that was an old school callback to a comment from like last year, which was ridiculously funny.
But anyway, what does it have to do with shorts being tight?
Well, shorts, pants, whatever.
Okay. Yeah. Doesn't matter.
Because shorts, if they're tight, it could reveal my religion or lack thereof. Yes.
Got it. Kinda.
All right. Circumcised, Dre. Whether I'm circumcised or not. Oh. That's the thing. Yes.
I get it now.
You have to explain everything to him.
I get it.
Wait a minute. Didn't he just have like a Flash t-shirt on a second ago?
No. Who would even wear a Flash t-shirt? Except Flash. Gordon.
Just want to make sure.
What's going on? Are we in a Dreisen hypothetical right now?
No.
All right.
We would never get that, get that guy out of here. Freaking imbecile.
Imbecile. All right, next question.
Next up, we got Dreisen. No, I mean, I'm just messing.
Whoa.
I mean, Retro. I read it wrong.
Retro
Cereal.
Oh, okay.
Retro Cereal. Like I said in the question below. Yeah, he must have had a different question somewhere. I am a big fan.
Awesome.
I am both an instructor in WC and JKD. Boom.
Amazing.
Having learned my JKD from a JKD instructor.
It's a good way to do it.
My WC from a WC instructor.
Also a good way to do it.
Okay.
Better than crossing those. JKD certification from a Wing Chun guy, Wing Chun certification from a Jeet Kune Do guy.
Right.
Yeah.
Which seems could be done, but it would be weird.
Would be weird.
Yeah. I saw firsthand how each of the styles misunderstood each other at particular points. Not to be too controversial, and if you do not want to answer, I totally understand. But in what ways do you feel that JKD practitioners misunderstand WT and vice versa? What do JKD people say about WT that makes you say to yourself, you really do not understand this aspect of WC and, of course, vice versa? Thanks.
Great question. Obviously, Jeet Kune Do people have a certain way of looking at things. They have a certain way of framing Wing Chun in their mind, and they have some ideas about where it's limited or where it's beneficial, which are kind of based, in my opinion, on their specific understanding of Wing Chun, which is just the stuff they took from it, which is not necessarily Wing Chun as an art on the whole. Wing Chun people also severely misunderstand Jeet Kune Do, thinking Bruce Lee just created it because he never finished learning Wing Chun, so he had to be the king of something and do his own thing is the way to go. So there are misunderstandings on both sides, and sometimes those things are intentional. I would venture to guess most of the time those things are intentional. A Jeet Kune Do person might be of the opinion that, you know, Bruce Lee evolved from Wing Chun, therefore Wing Chun is like a lower life form, and therefore Wing Chun is not that good. So that's going to kind of frame a lot of how they view Wing Chun is kind of inferior thing that they just took the best out of. And Wing Chun people are going to look at Jeet Kune Do as just hopping around with the right lead and occasionally doing a Pak Sao back fist and Lap Sao punch when you get in close, and not seeing that as anything really particularly special. So in general, to kind of answer questions like, well, what do I feel or what do I think when I hear these kind of things? Well, the truth is I don't actually feel a lot. When a Jeet Kune Do person, all right, like let's say a famous Jeet Kune Do name is on Instagram doing a video or explaining something, and they have some things that are, let's say, what I would consider misinterpretations of Wing Chun or sometimes even criticisms of Wing Chun, I don't care. Like, I don't go like, oh my God, like how can somebody be so stupid to think that Wing Chun only has one punch? Or how can someone be so stupid to think Wing Chun only does this or what? I literally don't care.
Damn.
Because when you listen to, let's say, for example, a Jeet Kune Do person miss what, at least what you feel, is a mis, say something that's a misrepresentation of Wing Chun, why would you get upset about that? Right. You know why people get upset about that? Because they feel that person who's saying that thing has a bigger platform than I have. So that means their misinformation is going to go out to more people and their word is going to be stronger and more accepted because they have a bigger platform. So what you're really jealous of is that person's platform, not what they actually said. Okay?
Interesting.
Because that's really, it's all haterade. Okay? It's
haterade
all,
is Thursday.
Yes. For all them haters, all right? That's all it is. And the thing is, you have to be able to look at a criticism of your own art. You have to be able to look at a negative viewpoint of your martial art, a take that is not positive, or a take that is ignorant, spoken by someone else, and be able to hear it dispassionately and be like, okay. Because the problem is, it's not the sign of an educated mind to freak out because someone said something that you don't agree with about your martial art. Because when a Jeet Kune Do guy says something like a Wing Chun only has one type of punch, all right? And you go, actually, Wing Chun has the lifting punch and the hook punch and we have this. It's like, who are you trying to convince, buddy? Who are you trying to convince? You're going to tell that Jeet Kune Do guy that he's wrong? And then he's going to go, oh, what? You know what? You're right. Let me do Wing Chun with you. Is that really the outcome that you think is going to happen at the end of this exchange? All right? You talk about being efficient in your martial art, whether Jeet Kune Do or Wing Chun, and you're going to waste time on that? That means you have not learned the lessons of your martial art and applied them to your daily life. All right? The idea that you're going to correct someone in the comments, the idea that you're going to correct someone back and forth in an online exchange and cure them of their ignorance in live time, and they're going to capitulate to what you have just told them and change 180 degrees in live time in the comments. When does this ever happen? All right?
Damn.
Do you expect that Jeet Kune Do person who misrepresented Wing Chun to now become your student after you corrected them online? Never going to happen, bro.
I never capitulate.
So what is your cost-benefit analysis of engaging? And what is your cost-benefit analysis of even becoming triggered by this? All right? When I hear a Wing Chun person misrepresent, or sorry, when I hear a Jeet Kune Do person misrepresent Wing Chun as an art or an aspect of Wing Chun, you know what I get from that? This Jeet Kune Do person thinks Wing Chun is this. And you just listen to it dispassionately. And the next thought in your mind is, what am I going to have for dinner? Okay? You don't go like, oh my God, that guy just told all these people in a live stream that Wing Chun only has one punch. Dude, calm down. Yeah, he said it. You're going to get upset about that? You're going to talk about how martial arts makes us more resilient? And you're going to bitch out because someone said something you disagreed with? Words? You let the sounds, use your vocal cords to make sounds guided by the mass in between your head. They make this random thing of sounds. That combination of sounds is going to make you pissy? And that's going to ruin your day? And you want to talk about being a warrior or a martial artist or not letting people live in your head rent-free? And you're going to bitch out because someone said Paxiao doesn't work against a boxer? Get a life.
Damn.
All right? Seriously. Damn. Okay? And then on the other side of the spectrum, I hear Wing Chun people misrepresent Jeet Kune Do all the time. Bruce Lee only created Jeet Kune Do because he didn't finish Wing Chun and he wanted to be the head man of his own style. No, that's absolutely not true. All right? And actually, although I'm a Wing Chun person, to be fair, I probably get more triggered by Wing Chun people misrepresenting Jeet Kune Do than by Jeet Kune Do people misrepresenting Wing Chun. Because the Wing Chun people sometimes, they're just willfully misrepresenting Bruce Lee because they don't have the platform that he did. And it's just haterade. You know, people need to say, okay, in martial arts, self-defense means I need to be able to protect myself in a way that is going to give me the best outcome. Sometimes self-defense is not physical, all right? If you see someone that you know, you have absolutely no chance in hell to do anything to this person, all right? This person is 300 pounds, right. And your hardest punch on your best day is going to bounce off their skull, okay? Then you have to rethink what you think self-defense means in that moment. Yeah. It's probably going to be verbal. It might be running. It might be something else, okay? But you're trying to look for the best outcome. Mm-hmm. And that's one aspect of self-defense, the physical component. But there's a mental component in that you have to learn how to be resilient through the martial arts training. And you also have to learn, just like through martial arts training, when someone gives you a punch, all right, let's say you're firing a punch at my face, all right, versus there's a your punch is glancing off my shoulder.
Okay.
The one punch lands on my face could have very serious consequences for me. The punch that glances off my shoulder, not so much, all right? So even within different types of techniques and different kinds, someone hits you with a kick as a glancing blow is different than if someone just fully grinds into you with a low kick on your thigh. Mm-hmm. So you also have to like look at these things on a spectrum. Okay, yeah, I got hit with that thing, but that wasn't a big deal. This thing is a lot more serious. I need to watch out for that. Mm-hmm. So such are the things that we deal with in our daily lives. And someone having a different opinion about martial arts than you is that glancing blow that does barely even lands on your shoulder. You're going to react to that thing the same way you're going to react to an elbow coming at your face, which is the actual serious threat.
Oh.
Okay? No. All right? I think what people need to stop doing is stop trying to correct other people who have different opinions on martial arts. I get it. Like, look, I have a big Wing Chun IG, and I get all sorts of MMA guys in there trolling me and stuff. I get it, right?
Yeah, but I got to be right.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, really, online discourse does not leave a lot of room for people changing their minds in real time. And face-to-face discourse might be a little bit different, because it's like one thing if I comment and say, like, yo, the way you're talking about Pacquiao is not correct. The other person's immediately going to fire back. But if we were like face-to-face and go like, hey, let me show you maybe a different idea about Pacquiao, and we went back and forth, we could have a completely different exchange face-to-face. And you might learn something, but still not have to agree with me at the end. That's the other thing. It's not a zero-sum game where you either agree with me or you don't agree with me. And the answer A or answer B is going to determine whether I think you're a swell guy or not. Mm. People have to accept that there's a huge continuum for conversation and discourse. And you do not have to fully agree with someone in their martial art to still respect them or to still think that they might have a valid point. It's a sign of an educated mind to understand the arguments against your argument fully and completely. And that doesn't mean that you necessarily have to agree with it, but you should be able to articulate the criticisms of your art and your style or anything as good as your opponent can, because you need to understand those to really understand your own martial art and not get triggered by that. All right. It's just that everyone wants to be right and say that everyone else is wrong. And I think people just need to stop trying to correct other people. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, for example, one of my good friends, Sifu David Peterson, right? Mm-hmm. He practices Wong Sun Leung Wing Chun. I practice Leung Teng Wing Chun. For sure, there are things he looks at in Leung Teng Wing Chun and he thinks like, nah, that's not good. You can't do it that way or whatever. And Wing Chun people look at some of the Wong Sun Leung stuff and you know, you can really do it like that or whatever. But that does not mean that we cannot be friends. Mm-hmm. All right? And that does not mean that we have to think that those disagreements mean that there's something weird between you and I. I say Bong Sao is this, you say Bong Sao is that, them be fighting words. Why? All right? In no other place in your life do you feel this way. If your friend liked to drive pickup trucks and you like to drive sport cars, they both get you from point A to point B. How much time are you going to spend telling your friend that pickup trucks are a stupid waste of everything and you shouldn't drive pickup trucks because they're dumb?
Oh.
All right? Like, can you imagine, like, and then constantly, every time you have a conversation with them, go like, let's talk about those pickup trucks, all right? Or you have a pickup truck in New York City, what's wrong with you?
Yeah, I'm going to spend a half hour.
Yeah, exactly, right? But if, for me, it's kind of like people, because they just cannot accept that someone believes something differently from them. Chill the F out, man. Calm down. Go out, read a book. Get a friend. Go eat some ice cream. Go to the park. Learn how to ice skate.
Be passionate about dinner.
Get off of social media. Yeah. Go to a restaurant. Have a conversation with a stranger. Walk down the street. Breathe. Calm the F down that someone else does something different than you in martial art. Jesus.
Well, you know, they are a particular kind of warrior. A keyboard,
keyboard warrior. Anyway.
I'm teaching myself how to type.
Really?
Yeah. I suck at typing.
I know. I know. I always type the questions for you.
Yeah. A year from now, I'm going to be okay at it, though.
Nah, you don't need that much time. Okay. 30 days. 30 days. You can be a creator. Yeah. You practice every day. You can be a monster on the keyboard.
Ooh,
yeah.
I can't wait.
What language are you learning to type in?
That's
Farsi.
That's foul.
All right, let's go. Next question. One more question. Last one.
Sure.
I think so, yeah. We're about an hour. We're almost an hour 15 in.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
What's the last question?
All right, next up, we got Dryzen.
You had to say it, didn't you?
Yeah, let's not say what the last question is. I'll just answer and be like, that's all I got to say about that. Every time I say we got one more question, Dryzen slips in under the radar.
Every time.
Every single time.
That never happened.
All right, let's go.
It's the first time that happened, I should say, because I'm right. Anyway, Dryzen is asking, he says... this is somewhat of a hypothetical.
Somewhat of a hypothetical. Okay. All right.
All right. It's let's just imagine you working at BMW motorcycle.
Okay.
Out in Seattle.
I swear to God, if Bill Nye is in this hypothetical, my blood pressure is going to go through the roof.
Right. And you're across the street from your kung fu school.
Okay.
Right? That you just started.
Please tell me Bill Nye, the science jerk, is not in this hypothetical.
The big question is how would he know about that?
How would Dryzen know that the kung fu school was across from where he used to work?
I'm looking at it right here. I'm looking at it right here.
You definitely are looking at it. Yeah, some black and white.
Right? So. Yeah.
Black and white and red all over.
So you're in your job and you're just like, man, this job sucks. This job blows. I like the motorcycles, but this job blows. I want to be across the street and training. I'd rather be over there training. Oh, well, I got to be here anyway. So all of a sudden, Billy Blanks walks in.
Billy Blanks from Taibo fame? King of the kickboxers?
Yeah. You know him?
Billy Blanks? Of course I know Billy Blanks. I have heard of Billy Blanks.
So he walks in.
Okay.
And he's like with one of the salespeople.
Okay.
You know, he's real cool with this guy.
Okay.
So the guy's like, yo, Billy, what's up, man? Yo, good to see you. See you, man. Welcome back. Let me take you to this new bike that we just got in. It's fire. And he takes Billy Blanks over to the new motorcycle off like maybe 20, 30 feet away. But you notice Billy Blanks is just, he keeps looking back at you. Like he's talking to the salesperson. He's just looking at you. And you're like, yo, why's Billy Blanks looking at me so tough? Anyway, you just like, whatever. I'm not even going to entertain this, but they both come over to you. And sales dude is like, hey, Alex, I want to introduce you to Mr. Blanks. And you're like, oh, okay, hey, I'm Alex. And then Billy's like, yeah, man, what's up, man? Good to see you, man. Nice to meet you. I was wondering, man, you ever do martial arts? And you're like, yeah, I actually do martial arts across the street. And he's like, man, I want to put you on to my thing, Taibo. And I want you to come with me and be in my Taibo video that I'm producing right now. And you're like, what?
What's the face? What are you doing?
What are you doing? What do you mean?
I mean, just, what is he doing?
Who?
Dryzen.
Yeah, no, he wrote a big... it's a lot of words here. But anyway, he says, he says, he's like, okay. Actually, what I'm asking,
it might not be Dre, because if he wrote a lot of words, Dre just said he can't type.
It's definitely not Dre. Yeah, I can't. It would have took me 4 hours. Right,
so Billy Blanks wants me to be part of Tybo.
Actually, what I'm asking, if Chuck Norris's chest hair was a pivotal story beat in his iconic fight with Bruce Lee in the 1972 Way of the Dragon, where did that chest hair go in those Total Gym commercials with Christy Brinkley?
He shaved it. And that's all I got to say about that. All right, everyone. Well, I hope you enjoyed that episode of The Kung Fu Genius. As always, don't forget to like this episode, subscribe to The Kung Fu Genius, hit that bell for notifications, comment below on any questions you want me to answer in a future episode. And as always, I'll see you guys next time. Word is I'm a Kung Fu Genius. Technique speaks for me, not lineage. Forget Jet Li, cause I'm the one. Many call me Sifu, but to you I'm Seagung. And I produce masters, you surpassed us. Your Kung Fu stiffer than corpse and caskets. City Wing Chun is the house I built. Violate the gate and your blood gets spilt. Alex Richter, always the victor. Let's do it. You ready, man? Even when we're ready, he's not ready.
Yeah,
so you're gonna be ready already.
I'm ready.
Get ready already.
Okay, first up, we got...
I didn't even start the episode.
Oh, my bad.
Unbelievable. Do you not know how this works? Intro stimulation for his muscles, you know, drinking the blood or whatever. Like his... No idea how to answer that question, so... Anyway, that was weird. There's an earthquake in here or something like that.
Billy Blanks. Billy shooting blanks.
Billy Blanks?
Billy shooting blanks. I like Billy shooting blanks. Billy shooting blanks.
Would you just stop?
He just wants to say Billy shooting blanks.
Exactly.
All right, peeps. On today's episode of The Kung Fu Genius, the genius will be answering all sorts of hot nonsense from YouTube. Lots of gems. Lots of Billy shooting blanks. Lots of, I forgot what the third one's supposed to be.
It's not Billy shooting blanks. Don't say Billy shooting blanks.
Lots of gems. Lots of stopping a punch with a snot rag. Lots of, hey, you better not mention that jerk, Bill Nye, the science guy, to KFG, the Kung Fu Genius.
In case you weren't sure who it was.
All right, peeps. On today's episode of The Kung Fu Genius, the genius will be answering all sorts of hot nonsense from YouTube. Lots of gems.
Sorry, I'm just preempting.
I would have had it.
Yeah,
I would have aced it. I would have aced it. Mm-hmm. All right, peeps. All right, peoples. On today's episode of The Kung Fu Genius, lots of gems. Lots of don't try to stop punches with snot rags.
Don't try to stop punches.
Don't do it. All right, peeps. On today's episode of The Kung Fu Genius, the genius will be answering.
What are you doing?
That's from her earlier.
It's just thrusting fingers.
Yes, this is from her earlier.
Yeah, but where?
But where? Lots of gems. Lots of stopping the punch with the damn snot ragging.
Are we getting the old Dre back?
Are you snot ragging it? Are you snot ragging it? If you are,
yo,
buy my book.
Yo,
don't be a snot rag.
You know what? I thought it was a booger, but it's not. Yeah, brother! All right, let's kill it.